Yeah, they all would have played their part, you know. Plus, I think also certain foreign embassies have done.
How?
For instance, the American embassy would have been very, certainly was not uninterested in these developments.
No, but the point being that meddling might even send people back peddling away.
Yeah, but then they would meddle with persons who have their confidence, and they won't directly in that sense. They would have operated through their trusted lieutenants or their trusted followers.
Are there any trusted followers?
Certainly, these right-wing elements would have been in...
No, I was wondering to what extent our right-wingers, even out-and-out capitalists, are willing to be agents of the Americans. Isn't there an automatic block rising from merely from the fact that they are still any...
No, here they were, at any rate, there was a meeting of common interests, no? After all, the Americans were also thoroughly dissatisfied with the government. And even with the SLP government, let alone the coalition government, on the nationalization of oil and all that.
Oh yes, with reference to the coalition mistakes, I think there was quite a lot of ill feeling in the country. It may have been merely the ill-feeling of rightist elements who were anyway annoyed, but still ill-feeling against Anil Gunasinghe and the way he handled the CTB, you know, the appointees and things. That would seem to have been an error in that it was far too blatant.
Appointees?
Yes, I know the story was going around that they had lots of LSSP people suddenly coming into the CTP and people without qualifications.
I don't know. I don't think he finally succeeded in getting...
I don't know. I have not heard.
No, I don't think he really, you know, because he really couldn't give his imprint on that ministry or that department, really. That's my view.
Well, I suppose there's quite a lot to support your view in that R.T. Silva was the chairman, wasn't he?
I think so. And Rajendra was the permanent secretary. I know this, he failed in what I thought was a very key matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small matter but a very important issue. That was reinstating those persons who had been dismissed by the CTB for participation in the strike of 1963. Now he couldn't do that, although he wanted it done and he was trying, doing his utmost to get it done.
Why? From where did the opposition come?
I don't know. It must have come from some elements within the administration and... Anyway, he couldn't do even a thing like this. So, simple a matter. So, I can't imagine him having put his men into the CTB or, you know, having done anything when he couldn't do it. So simple a matter as... reinstating, just there were not very many, there would have been about three or four the most. So that's again, you know, the coalition having been formed in June 64. Even the ministers who wanted certain things done could not, because the old administration and the old setup, then, you know, the pressure of that was sufficient. And they could not bring any counter pressure, the pressure of the mass movement outside, to break down that resistance. So even a little matter like reinstating three dismissed employees, three employees who had been dismissed for a strike called by the very union to which Anil belonged.
You felt that those employees had been victimized?
Yeah, and the management also made it clear. They were being victimized for their for certain acts they did in the course of that strike.
What is the line between victimization and legitimate dismissal?
Well, legitimate dismissal would be on any bona fide breach of discipline which itself justifies dismissal. Mm-hmm. But here they were all arising out of the strike.
Mm-hmm. But say in the course of the strike they do some act of sabotage, isn't that...
But then here was no sabotage at all. Here I know the one case at Mahatali. There had to be a further strike, in fact. You know, after the strike was called off, a number of days later there was another strike of the employees of that particular depot because the regional manager there was discriminating against strikers and showing a distinct partiality to for those who worked during the strike. Now, arising from that, or in protest against that, the workers went on strike. And soon after, or, you know, they called off the strike after the certain grievances were met. A little incident occurred in the workplace. And they dismissed the president of that branch, president, secretary, and a number of other officials of the branch.
So now this is after the strike?
After the strike.
So did the incident involve some breach of discipline?
No, the incident involved, even if what the management alleged was true, it involved a breach of discipline, but not a breach that justified dismissal.
But because the chap had participated in the strike?
I mean, that's only the basis on which one can find any sort of reasonable or rational explanation for that action. Now, Anil was unable to get that chap or those workers reinstated.
This raises a whole avenue of questions with regard to the administration. But I'd like to leave that side and come to 64 and the actual defeat of the throne speech. It would appear that they had maneuvered this, but there were several amendments. The Hanayakas, the UNP one, any others?
The Federal Party had its own amendment, the LSSPR had its amendment.
In fact, you had met previously and agreed on a specific amendment, had you?
The LSSPR had its own amendment, yes.
Who formulated that amendment? Or any particular individual?
No, it was a collective effort.
Mm-hmm. In the course of that negotiation, did you, in the course of that meeting, did you consider the other amendments being put forward by the Hanayak and others?
We didn't consider it at all because there was no question of our supporting it, so we didn't even bother to read it to you.
But the next day, Edmund was persuaded to vote for the Hanayak. Was it only Edmund or anyone else?
Well, Edmund, and Edmund committed the votes of himself and Merrill to that amendment.
And from what you say in your book, you argue that this is totally against the LSPR policies. So what did that involve in terms of party discipline? I mean, after he had acted in this manner?
After he had acted in this manner, the others were too weak to act against him and they ratified the action.
Though it was against the previous decision? Yes. Were there any who were with you in asking for some sort of
a dissociation of the party from that action? Not in that in the governing body at that time.
I should have thought Balatampu might have.
He was one of those who voted for that earlier proposal of Edmund that we support that common amendment.
Oh, that had been defeated earlier.
Yeah. So he was one of those who supported that. The only chap who could have, who may have, would have been Merrill Fernando.
Who may have what?
Who may have agreed with my position was Merrill Fernando. But then he himself had voted with Edmund, so...
Where is he now?
He's still with Edmund.
Is he in active politics or has he withdrawn?
He is active with Edmund.
And ultimately, what led you to leave the party? I mean, why didn't you leave at that stage?
At that stage, if I left, I would have been just myself. So I waited for a time to mobilize the widest support on In fact, that was one reason why I even went with them.
Try and change them over?
That was in June 64, you know, I was opposed to the split.
Oh, you were opposed?
Oh, yes. I was opposed to the split. The question of the split itself was raised only about 48 or 72 hours before the conference, for the first time.
By Edmund?
By Edmund. Oh, not even Edmund. I think Edmund, maybe Edmund or one of the Bala. So, of course, I opposed it. But I had not the time to go to raise this question with the others. With the others meaning the ranks who were supporting us. So I knew that if I didn't go with them, it would have been misunderstood. So I went along with the others, but of course then used the opportunity to take the issue to the ranks who were supporting us. Rank and file.
With what sort of success?
Initially, no. No success whatever till, in fact, the first 6 months. And it was only after the vote, yes. And that also after some time after the vote, that persons began to see that there was a sort of organic connection between the vote and all the shortcomings of the LFSPR and that decision to split. Anyway, that took a considerable time later.
How would you explain this?
Explain? Which one?
The fact that they took such a time, a long time to realize it. At least the group that realized it.
Well, most of these were very young comrades. Actually, we took really the youth with us.
In that sense, you took the idealist then?
Well, the young comrades had not much experience yet in the movement. And there were strong ideas, no doubt about that. So they had to see things before.
Mm-hmm. And what, you said you took some time to get your point of view across. Time factor is one, but did any specific issue help you to winnow some?
No, all these issues finally helped. That is the wrong attitude to the press, question of the press bill, the vote in parliament.
Then I noticed you dealt at length with the question of attitude towards the local government elections and the elections of March 65. What was the LSSPR line?
Their line was, and I think continues to this day, is neither one nor the other.
And what did you suggest?
I suggested that wherever we didn't have any candidates, we were to support the candidates of the coalition against the UNP.
Did you get any support within the party for that suggestion?
Yes, later, a third at least.
Any lieutenants or leaders in that third?
Who are you? Nana. George Pereira. A number of chaps who were originally the LSSP and came, split away.
Yes.
Came back.
With you?
Yeah. Amardasa Fernando. Amardasa was a fairly senior, not fairly, but very senior comrade in the LSSP.
She is chap at
the university. Then, number of trade unions. And most important, a chap called Martinez who came subsequently, who didn't come with us, come back with us, but came soon after we left.
He's a trade union.
Yeah.
What union?
He was originally in the motor workers union.
Since, your suggestion regarding the March election was not adopted, I suppose you were in...
in the minority, within mm-hmm. the...
No, and you would have been in an embarrassing position with regard to the actual election work. Did you follow the party line as such, the R line?
Well, I was contesting a seat in the Northern Province. Mm-hmm. So, the issues there were somewhat different, no? Mm-hmm. So this question did not weigh so heavily or, didn't play that.
And when did you actually break away?
Formal break was in end of November, December 66.
On any specific issues?
No. No specific. I kept all the cumulative.
But in view of your career, shall I put it, from 64 to that point, it would seem to indicate that while you have admitted your first error, you have greater doubts about the value of the coalition than, say, the Colvinar group or the NM group. Does that still prevail?
Well, now of course the situation and the issue is something different. Now, you see, in 64 June, one was fighting within the party for what one thought was should be the correct policy, and he said, and against, specifically against the policy of coalition. Today, that is, the coalition government having been defeated the manner it was in December 64, today the issue is to put that coalition back into. Till that happens, the masses will not be ready for any other, form of political action. The very defeat and the manner of that defeat in December 64, they want to avenge that defeat. So one can say that today there's a political position, no inconsistency between opposition to coalition in June 64 and today saying the coalition back to power office or back to power.
Because
today's situation demands that as the immediate
goal. Because the coalition in power is much better than the UNP group in power.
But no, because most important reason is because they want, the masses want to avenge that defeat. That defeat which was brought about by a conspiracy of certain right-wing forces. In fact, the mass movement goes forward by placing the coalition back in office. Unlike in June 64 when one opposed the formation of a coalition.
Why?
In June 64, the mass situation did not demand that a coalition government should be in office.
Wasn't there danger from the right even then?
No, there was a danger from the right, but that could have been averted, for instance, or by the development of the class struggle or the development of the struggle on the round the 21 demand. You see, that prospect was there. If that could have been pursued.
Yes, but the point could be made.
You see, the demand for the question of the coalition government came directly into conflict with a developing mass struggle against the SLP government.
Yes.
And against the right wing.
But that's the point. This mass struggle as reflected in this trade union thing. Wasn't it a purely an urban mass struggle?
Not only, it took in the plantation workers.
Yes, but including a dubious section factor from the mass group.
I wouldn't say in terms of a struggle that there was a dubious factor.
Mm-hmm. Alright then, say this mass struggle came forward, both in intention and otherwise, it would lead to the disintegration of the SLFP. But could it set up anything positive in the sense that the SLFP would have still remained as a factor, but a factor with less power than before, whereas the very fact that the classes struggle was arising would mean that the rightist group would get together and they would be, it would open the way for them to get into power.
No, equally there was the prospect of the political arm of the trade unions coming to power also was not to be excluded. However remote or however
but the point
maybe to visualize, the development of this struggle could well have opened up. And in any case, it is only through the development of such a struggle that the working class parties can ever hope to come to power.
Yes, But the point is, was this the right time in the sense that it would seem to have been so remote? And it would only...
I don't think it would have been so removed that, you know, to God for one thing, you know, this was for the first time I've... the plantation and the urban worker was brought together. The government was very weak. The showdown, one cannot lightly say, dismiss it off by saying, well, nothing was going to come out of that. In fact, it was precisely, at least the right wing appreciated the potentiality of that. That Mrs. Bandaranaike was keen on a coalition government.
I mean, because she was a...
One of the reasons why Mrs. Bandaranaike in June 64, or round about that time, May, June 64, wanted a coalition government.
Was because of this threat?
I don't see that the connection is so, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, on the other hand, one can argue now, the way things developed, UNP brought the government down and came to power. But, say, your line of attack was adopted and there was no coalition, I still think the probability, as against the possibility of the working class gaining power, the probability would have been that he would have succeeded in bringing the government down and the UNP would have stepped into the breach.
I don't know if one can say that the UNP would have stepped in. I mean, suppose if we permitted it or if we so led it to permit the UNP to...
I shouldn't say the UNP. I should say the right wing. It could have been the army.
I don't know, that is, depending on our weaknesses, that would be. Depending on the weaknesses of the left.
It is speculative.
But then such type of struggles are inevitable. It will be the government of the type of Mrs. Bandaranaike. Government of this middle of the road type of government, assaults on the left must be a part and parcel of that type of government. Well, if the parties of the left are taking the attitude, oh no, we should not do anything, you will have the situation that you had in Indonesia, where the Communist Party kept quiet for 10 years. In the face of a government of the Bandaranaike variety, the Sukarno government kept the man, I say, the right wing is going to come to power. We should do nothing.
Yes, but they did something and they are disintegrated now.
Well, after 15 years they tried to do something.
But they failed.
No, that's why I say, because the party of the working class had not addressed itself to what should have been its policy, given the government of the type of Sukarno or Kerensky or Mrs. Bandaranaike. Mm-hmm. Now if Lenin had pursued the same policies in relation to Kerensky that the Communist Party in Indonesia pursued in relation to Sukarno, there would have been no Bolshevik revolution, there would have been no revolution, October revolution.
Mm-hmm. But since you openly proclaim this policy while remaining within the SLFP coalition, surely it can...
No, now I'm honest. I'm not on the coalition. I'm saying about...
the left forces.
The left forces in relation to a government of Bandai, on the 21 demands.
Uh-huh. Yes, but it's implied that while, you know, if by that your sort of analogy of Kerensky and Lenin would imply that your support for the SLFP coalition is a highly qualified support and that it doesn't preclude...
I was talking in relation to the SLFP government before the coalition government came into being. Well, you were on the question as to how could you have permitted development of the mass situation against the SLFP without opening the door to the right wing.
Yes.
I was meeting that.
Well, alright, shall I bring you to the present point? And I accept the fact that the immediate goal is to get the coalition. But from what you say about that situation in 64, where again, you get into power, a coalition, you're back to June 64.
With this difference, now the coalition can come in only on the crest of a rising mass situation. In 64, the coalition came on the recession of a mass situation, so to say.
Yes. And
now the coalition can come in only on a rising mass situation. That's all the difference between what the left can achieve or not achieve within a coalition.
That's right, but you still have a highly qualified attitude towards the SLF people. I mean, you call Mrs. Bandaranaike or Kerensky.
Or Sukarno or whatever.
Right. So, if you openly say that, automatically they label you as Leninist. And therefore, in the Leninist tradition, deal a blow at Kerensky. So, this will create...
When I mean that Mrs. Bandaranaike is a Kerensky, the idea is to, by an analogy, to bring out the role of a government of that type, simpliciter, that is a government of that. But in a coalition government is not a government of Mrs. Bandaranaike.
Mm-hmm.
And a coalition government on the basis of a mass situation that is going to bring the coalition back to office is still less so. The weight of the mass movement in that government would be immeasurably stronger.
Mm-hmm.
So if the parties of the working class know to act, I think there is a...
But isn't one factor you have to cope with always there, namely the suspicion of some of the SLFP ranks with regard to the intentions of the Samajwadis? In fact, I mean, you yourself, I think...
Actually, it is not the intentions of the Samajwadis that matter so much. It is how sharp or how significant is mass intervention in politics. You know?
And in this case, what do you mean by mass intervention? As reflected in the electoral...
Not only like that, for the masses are ready to act on their own, independently. Now, on the morrow of a coalition government coming in, one can well visualize the situation where the masses would directly intervene to take over.
Yes. There's another question arising. Aren't the masses whom you talk largely SLFP masses?
I don't know when
they
are.
I mean, as I say, SLFP.
No, even SLFP, they may be SLFP or even UNP masses.
Mm-hmm.
But if they are ready to, if they do something that is, by its very nature, of a socialist act, the SLFP masses tomorrow or the coalition government coming in, call them whether they may be SLFP, UNP or whatever it is. If on their initiative and their direct intervention, they take over certain workplaces in Colombo and run it under their control, drive out the owners and run it on their own control, the government will face, you know, legalizing that conquest. They may be SLFP fellows in their, having all the prejudices of the SLFP.
Mm.
Now, that is what I talk of as being independent or in the intervention of the mass movement, of the masses.
And you should support it, because it is a mass movement.
How many such acts, or how ready the masses are for this type of action, that will finally determine the success or failure of the new government that is going to come in. If it tells them, I say, get back to your workplace, this is a matter for us to be done in Parliament, you fellows can't do these things.
Yeah, but say these masters take a chauvinist line, what are you going to do?
No, chauvinist line, I'm now talking of in terms of their taking over workplaces.
Yes, but I mean, in a sense, you're admitting them to a position of power. And from that position, if they step further into chauvinist activities.
No, this is the type of activity that would that the left wing within the coalition would have to support.
Yes, but the point is that the masses don't always act according to purely economic considerations of class struggle basis, get rid of the owners. They have other considerations. They might be SLFP oriented, they might be chauvinist oriented, and they might go further.
Do what?
When
one talks of independent intervention of the masses in the political arena, if one talks of this type of action of the masses, they are going to take over.
Mm-hmm. Say the rural masses take over the estates and in the process begin massacring the Tamils.
Take over the estates? They won't be taking over the land. Yeah.
They'll be taking over the land. But they're striking at the capitalists, but in the process, combine with it. And this is a
so that is inevitable. In every mass action that there is a certain measure of such type of activity. Because they can't distinguish, because of their very backwardness, they can't distinguish between the healthy and progressive and necessary step.
But then what you get here would be too...
But in every revolution produces that quota of that type of action.
Yes, but in this case, it is a case of a petty bourgeois decimating a proletariat. Because the masses will be petty, will have petty bourgeois...
That is the rural masses who invade the estates.
Uh-huh.
Really? But if that is going to weaken imperialism,
it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering what the attitude of people like Felix Das, N.Q. Das and Maithripala Sennayaka was to this coalition as it exists now. Have they, I mean, it was obvious that they had doubts earlier. I think you pinpointed the fact that Mrs. Bandaranaike was acting independently. Have they swung round and now to a more, shall I say, trustful, cooperative line?
I don't know.
Because as far as I see it, I mean, people speak of the left wing and the right wing of the split. So now this split is not precluded in the future.
Ah, yeah. The splits are very... You can't legislate against splits.
Of course, another question arises from your reference to the mass struggle. The question of our proletariat, urban proletariat and plantation proletariat being able to cooperate with the peasantry. In fact, I would like to draw attention to our peasantry. Can you bring them into a mass struggle?
Make up the rear of it.
But aren't they basically conservative?
Oh, yes. That's why, you know, in all countries it's that way. Even in the agrarian problem is most acute. They still are slow to move, no?
In fact, Kolbinar raised an interesting point with relation to the Squatters movement, and he said in the past insufficient attention has been paid to this group by the left. Would you comment on that?
I think hardly any attention was paid to.
On the other hand, you have to compete with CPD.
Oh,
you as minister, I mean.
Encouraging a squatters movement of his own.
Yes. I think land use, the phrase land use is not known now. But I was interested in your comment in the rear. Isn't it the argument of the LSSPR that the coalition, in fact it may have been your argument earlier, that the coalition represented a situation in which the peasant-oriented sort of Kerensky type, shall I say, social revolutionary type of movement was in the van, and the Bolsheviks, that is the LSSP, were in the rear. But even as it stands now, you are in the wrong position. You are not in the leading, but you are following.
I didn't quite...
No, I think even in terms of Marxist thinking, this has to be considered, that in the present coalition, as it exists in opposition, and even as it came into being in June '64...
The right-wing was in the SLF, the right-wing partner of the coalition was the dominant part.
Was not even the dominant, yes, it was...
Today, in June '64, and even today it will continue. It will continue till that period when the masses get into action.
So you don't feel that it is anti, the Islam is anti mass because there is a road for the masses to
today's position is to get the coalition back into office before the class differentiation of the mass movement can come in. So it can, there is no question of it being anti mass. Put the coalition back in power. One is only facing up to a particular situation. It may not be the most favorable or it may not be the most desirable.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to address yourself to what is the lineup of, you know, what is today's burning question that interests the people, you know, the broad masses. So in that one case, where in Ceylon, well, the coalition, return the coalition to power. Or the coalition to power. And in another country it may be a different slogan, like say for instance in England it would be that of saying the Labour Party to power.
I noticed that you stress this pragmatic line in Marxism and in fact the pragmatism inherent in Marxism in your pamphlet. But don't you think that this might not have been admitted by the LSSP somewhere around 1950-1948? When their tendency was to take the Marxist goals and emphasize principles more in an ideological kind of way.
You know, I don't know what the situation was in 54 or 48 or whatever the period. But you know, it's common to all Marxist thinkers or to anyone trying to formulate any policy. That you the point you take as your point of departure the situation at any given moment, no?
Mm-hmm. But I'm
so if the party did not address it, then to that extent it was immature, it was
in fact some of the leftists themselves also in the party then I think looking back make this criticism of themselves.
Maybe there'll be, I mean I don't for a moment, I'm not trying to sort of defend every act or every position that the party took up in its 20 or 25 or 30 or 35 years.
In fact,
but of course there is this again to be borne in mind in when talking of that early period, of the early period, I do not have the 50s, but certainly the early period, the party was still by and large a propagandist group.
You mean you didn't have a strong base?
Base. So that again would explain a number of...
But do you have a stronger mass base now? More members than in the 40s?
And in terms of the thinking of the masses, they look on the party, you know, not how they would have looked. They would have in the early 40s certainly looked on it still as a propagandist group. I mean, the question of vesting such a party with power, they was not serious, did not seriously interest the broad masses.
Yes, but the party leaders thought they could get electoral power of sorts in 52 and then again in 60.
No, I don't know about what I'm talking about. When any party is in a stage of a propagandist group, and it's in that phase of its existence, it certainly won't address itself to the immediate slogans or to the immediate policies that would orient it to power. That comes at a different stage in a party's development. When it would, when its mind would be addressed to what are the slogans that we should advance to gain leadership of the mass movement. But so long as a party is only a propagandist group, it won't address its mind even to that. And that is true of the communist parties, of all parties, of all working class parties at any rate. Say for instance, the problems that a party like the communist party in England, it won't be, you know, seriously faced with this as a problem, even today.
Or even the Communist Party here.
I don't know, here it may be, you know,
more
so than, but in England certainly it's not, you know. But say for instance the Communist Party in France or the Communist Party in Italy.
Mm-hmm. This is the sort of problem they have. That's very interesting. In fact, I was also interested in your, with reference to your decisions in the past. In your last interview, you mentioned a talk with Chuck Anderson on the language issue. I was wondering whether that talk influenced your decision to leave the LSSPR?
No. My decision to leave the, actually, as I said, you know, I was opposed to the formation of the LSSPR. I thought it was utterly premature and, you know, there's no historical justification for its formation then. Because parties that don't come out, you know, because one is dissatisfied with the policy of a leadership, doesn't justify the formation of a party.
In fact, how united is the LSSPR, even as it existed in no time, but as it exists now, aren't there different factions within?
Must be riddled with factions.
Or was it when you were there?
Well, there were differences undoubtedly because of their very lack of political cohesion. Because what happened was a certain group of persons who were opposed to a particular tactic brought together, so that's not a party, or it's not even a party in embryo. You have an embryo, there is a certain unity.
I noticed that you refer to the Healyite caucus in this book. That's within the LSSPR.
Yeah.
What's this group?
That's a group that owes its allegiance to a chap called Jerry Healy in England.
On
which is a group outside the international, outside the Fourth International.
On what grounds? What is their line?
Oh, a whole host of...
Minor?
Not minor, but say Cuba was one. Algeria is another. Number of issues.
You mean they are...
But basically, pursuing what one may call a terribly sectarian line.
On Cuba, they were against Khrushchev's policy, were they?
No. On Cuba, they are not even willing. They are unwilling to characterize the government as a workers'
government.
Government.
Mm-hmm. What has Michael Wanda or Tony Wanda, as he calls himself, sometimes got to do with this group?
Is that a rebellment?
Yeah, because I raised this because I came across a chap in the campus, former Trotskyite. I think they still work with the Trotskyites on a sort of common platform, but a member of this group, and I think they are inclined to call themselves a fighting front or something or the other. And it would appear they are going out into national politics too, certainly in Velimada, in Colombo. One or two other places. And I was interested because I was wondering what sort of relevance it has to the Sylvian situation.
Well, Healy supported all the ultra-left positions that Edmund took.
But was it purely on an ideological basis or was it well informed? Did he know anything about the situation?
But considering that is the same position he takes up in relation to Cuba and Algeria and a number of other its own political positions, so it was not something strange that he should approve or support. So within that group there was a tendency which was more consistent in its support of Healy than Edmund.
I'm afraid I didn't have time to read the other pamphlet on coalition politics. I was wondering, as a basis for discussion, what the main points were.
The main point there was about opposed to coalition.
But don't you think that at least for some time, coalition politics, one may even call it front politics, has come to stay?
Yeah, now it has come to stay very much. Now, as I say, till the coalition comes back to power, that must, you can't run away from that.
In fact, it seems to be coming about in certain regions in India too. I mean, this sort of tactic, no contest pacts, etc.
Yeah, in Bengal and a number of Madras, even Kerala.
If I may jump to an entirely different sphere, I'm interested in the Indo-Ceylon question. And I was wondering what comments you have to make both with reference to the past, but particularly with reference to the present situation.
I had brought out a pamphlet on the minority problem.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I haven't got a copy here.
Will it be possible to get a copy? Then we need to...
Yeah, I will try to get some, all the copies got sold off. In fact, I am without a copy myself. I am trying to, recover something from some friend or the other. I'll post that on to you. Although that doesn't deal with the Indo-Ceylon problem as such, it's more concerned with the northern and eastern province.
Mm-hmm.
But, the basic approach would be the same, so...
Mm-hmm. But what is your attitude to the Sirima or Shastri Pact?
Well, my personal view is that I am certainly opposed to anyone being forcibly repatriated.
Mm-hmm.